You're listening to The Tales We Tell, a podcast about spooky stories, unsolved mysteries, and local lore. I'm your host, Hannah Parch.
And I'm Katie.
Welcome back. I feel like I really hyped myself up for that intro, and then as soon as I started, I got nervous that I... I was doing it wrong. I took like a really deep breath. You're listening. Oh, man. Well, my announcements this week are the announcements from last week, because this is the episode where I actually put in the correct dates for telegraphs and taxis. So just to reiterate, the first commercial telegraph was in 1837. And the earliest taxis were in 1605. So, if you have listened to the Mako Light episode, that one story, we're going to say that they called a horse-drawn carriage for the traumatized conductor slash engineer slash...
Was it a conductor?
I don't know. Railroad person. What was the other one that your dad said?
So...
Latchman?
No, a switchman.
Switchman.
Because there's the engineer who drives the train and the conductor. As we learned just now. We started recording, the conductor rides in the caboose, or used to, because cabooses aren't a thing anymore, but would ride in the caboose and do all the paperwork. Right. And so he would kind of just, you know, and especially when they would go to a switching yard and, you know, stack up the cars.
Right.
He would be in charge of making sure all the,
okay,
you know, so, keeping track of what car was where and whatnot.
So it must have been the
engineer. And then there's the switchman who will get out when they're switching and couple and uncouple and all that good stuff.
So I think based on that, it must have been the engineer, because it was the guy driving.
Okay.
I think.
I also just learned tonight that there is a difference between engineer and conductor. I always thought they were just two different names.
Yeah.
Or two different terms for the one who drives the train. But no.
Correct.
That is not accurate.
Yeah. Okay. I got a really nice compliment this weekend, and I have to share it because I just have to brag. So our friend Luke was here last night.
Did you make a casserole?
I did. I made my casserole. And he complimented that, which was great. But he told me that he kept talking about how much he loved the house, which I love when people compliment my house, because I love this house. But he was like, I think I've narrowed it down to the three things that I just love about your house. And he said, number one, it's clean. And I was like, say that again. Like, I work so hard to make this house clean.
Luke is just like one of the greatest human beings to ever exist.
I know.
But like, just genuine. It's not like he's trying to be nice. He's just like, I have a nice thought and I'm going to share it.
I'm going to share it.
Be very genuine and whatnot. Yeah.
His second reason to love the house was the decor, which again, I'm like, man, compliment my house, its cleanliness and the way it's decorated, and I will melt.
I really like the parlor redo that you did. It gives me very like dark academia vibes.
Yes.
And I love
it.
That's
what I'm going for.
As far as an aesthetic, big fan.
Thank you.
I feel like we need more of these like little skulls in there too.
Yeah.
Just a few more randomly in there. Not a ton.
Yeah.
Because you don't want it to be overwhelmingly like, you know, spooky, but just a few touches to really amp up that dark academia.
Yeah, I probably should redo the mantle at some point. But that's the vibe I'm going for in my whole house. Mm-hmm. Like, dark tones. And, like, I told Jarek last night, because we were showing Luke around, and Jarek kept turning on the lights, and I was like, no overhead lights ever.
Big light is bad.
I'm going to take all the bulbs out of our overhead lights. Like,
I feel like I've mentioned this, that I saw recently that somebody, especially an, you know, like ADHD or neurodivergent person, turns on the big light as a motivator.
Yes. Because they can turn it off when they're done with the task.
Yes. It's like, okay, I need to do this thing, and I've been putting it off, so I'm going to turn on the big light. And the big light stays on until I do the task. So they basically kind of like torture themselves into doing the task.
Make yourself uncomfortable.
And then it's like, all I have to do to turn this off is this simple task. Yep. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
So I've started trying to implement that some. But it's funny because certain rooms, mm-hmm. the big light is not only acceptable but necessary. So, like, the yeah. kitchen.
Mm-hmm. The yeah, kitchen, we have to have the big light on in the kitchen.
Need the big light. And then in the study, I need the big light.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I recently saw your study for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, I need the big light and the lamp.
Oh, okay.
So, like, the lamp by the chair, that... Because mm-hmm. the lamp adds the cozy vibes.
Yes.
But, like, I need the big light for good lighting for when I'm crafting and making
yeah, things. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know. I have a real problem where I do my crosswords by lamp light, but the crosswords that I do are, like, it's, like, when you get the puzzle done, there's, like, shaded... certain letters are shaded, or, like, the boxes are shaded, mm-hmm. and it'll be the answer to, like, a riddle that's at the top. So if you can figure out the riddle answer first, it kind of helps you because you can fill in the boxes. But the shading is so light, like, there's not a great contrast there that I can't see it in the dim light. And so I started, like, holding it under the lamp and highlighting all, like, taking a highlighter and highlighting all of my boxes. And I was sitting in there doing it earlier, and, like, wasn't even facing the lamp, could hardly see. And I was like, this is really a problem that I've made for myself. Like, I just refuse to use actual light to do things. But I was like, but the vibe is cool. Like, you know.
Speaking of my study, by the way, my wallpaper was originally supposed to arrive tomorrow, came yesterday. Ooh. So I was able to measure and cut out all the pieces so they're ready to just get up on the wall. So I'm going to finish that tomorrow.
Oh my gosh.
And then I have to paint.
I told Jarek my plan to paint our bathroom the color of your dining room.
I can, we've got some extra paint. I can give you, like, the name of it at least. Or
yeah, that'd be great.
So that you can get it made up.
Yeah. As soon as I mentioned that to him, too, he was like, don't do those stick-on tiles on the floor. And I was like, we'll cross that bridge when we get to
I'll think about it.
Like, the floor has to change at some point. Whatever.
Maybe I can come over and help you do the tiles.
Yeah, one day while he's at work. Jarek, ignore this part.
We should have used the mute buttons.
I know.
Okay. He'll never know.
Okay, are you ready for today's story? All right.
Yes, please.
This one is kind of reverse engineered, and I'll explain as we go. Okay. Do you know the...
Muffin Man?
Close. Nursery rhyme. of Old King Cole.
So, no, but Shelton is going through a rewatch phase for uh-huh. How I Met Your Mother.
Uh-huh.
And I recently watched the episode with him, like, last night or the night before, where Robin says that she met a Canadian celebrity
uh-huh.
and they invited her back to their place to look at some unique collection
uh-huh.
and then asked for a weird sex act.
Huh.
And she's like, I'll only tell you if you get the person, the item, and the act.
Oh.
And one of the guesses for the sex act was something about the Old King Cole.
I can't imagine what it is based on the rhyme. So the rhyme goes, Old King Cole was a merry old soul, and a merry old soul was he. He called for his pipe, and he called for his bowl, and he called for his fiddlers three. Every fiddler, he had a fiddle, and a very fine fiddle had he. Twee, tweedledee, tweedledee. I think I messed that up. I don't know. Went the fiddlers. Oh, there's none so rare as can compare with King Cole and his fiddlers three.
It started to sound familiar and then didn't sound familiar. So,
For some reason in my head got King Cole mixed up with whatever the rhyme is about baking crows into a pie.
Uh-huh.
But this one apparently is just about him and his fiddlers that he likes. Okay, so the first known printed version of the rhyme is from 1709, and there's much speculation about who exactly King Cole might have been, like what it was
based on.
Mm-hmm. And I'll go ahead and say I got this idea from an episode of And That's Why We Drink, where Em went over a bunch of like nursery rhymes, and they essentially explained like
how a lot of them are real dark, like it's raining, it's pouring, mm-hmm. the old man is snoring,
yeah,
bumped his head, went to bed, and didn't wake up
in the morning.
Didn't really, never really thought about it until mm-hmm. it was like, oh, that's a warning about not falling asleep after a concussion.
Yeah, exactly. Like, ring around the rosy.
Ashes to ashes.
And, like, Humpty Dumpty and, like, mm-hmm. all this stuff. So, I got inspired.
The dark side of nursery rhymes.
Yeah. So, I got inspired by them and then did a bunch of extra research. So, a couple theories on who King Cole might have been. One is, okay, these names are spelled C-O-E-L. Mm-hmm. I pronounce that Cole? Coel? Cole. We're going to say Cole to keep it simple. So one is Cole Hen, or known as Cole the Old, who was a Welsh-born king who ruled in the fourth.
Oh, if that's Welsh, there's no way. Okay,
yeah, I'm sure it's not right.
I mean, there's, you never know. You never know. It could be Cole. It could be Kale.
Yeah, or like Sewell.
Yeah.
Who knows? So he ruled during the 4th and 5th century. He died when he was 70, which was like super old for 5th mm-hmm. century. And then some versions of his story allege that he had a daughter named Helena who loved music. And so that's where like the fiddlers came in. There's another guy named Cole Godhibog, which is Celtic. So again,
no telling on pronunciation.
He was known as Cole the Magnificent, and he was a Celtic ruler who was said to have lived in Colchester, Essex. Also in the 4th to 5th centuries, the town was allegedly named after him, and he also allegedly had a music-loving daughter named Helena.
Interesting.
Which would be a very weird coincidence.
Weird coincidence.
Okay.
Unless Helena was like the Sarah or the Mary of that time.
True, yeah, like the Megan or the whatever.
The Megan or the Kristen of our era.
Yeah.
Where everyone was like, when we were growing up, everyone was Megan or Jessica mm-hmm. or Jennifer or Kristen.
Yeah. And then later in life, I found out everyone was actually Hannah, because I know so many Hannahs now. Two of my best friends are named Hannah. It's very confusing. We have a group chat, and they are labeled as Hannah 2 and Hannah 3. Because I'm Hannah 1.
And obviously, you're probably either Hannah 2 or 3 in their phones.
Yeah, I think for one, I'm Hannah, like one of them has Hannah 2, T-O-O, and then I think I'm Hannah also, which I kind of love. But I just labeled them in order of like when I knew them and also birth, because I'm the oldest one. Okay, so another option for King Cole is a fictional story written in 1600, or published in 1600, by a guy named Thomas Deloney. And the name of the book, which I did read part of, is called Thomas of Reading, or The Six Worthy Yeomen of the West. And it's all written in Old English, so congratulations to me.
Painful.
You're welcome, everyone. I read that. So in this book, there is, a guy named, Thomas of Reading. Like, the book isn't really about him, which is the title is then confusing. So he's Thomas of Reading, but he's also Thomas Cole. So, like, there's our connection. And I'm just gonna give you, like, a summary of this wild-ass part of the story that has to deal with this Thomas Cole guy. Okay, so he was a wealthy merchant from Reading, which is like 40 miles outside of London. And during his travels, he would often stay at the Colebrook Inn in Colebrook. There's a lot of coals in this. I don't know.
By the end of it, it's the word coal is not going to sound right anymore.
Not.
It's like when you say the same word over and over again, it just starts to sound wrong and
yeah,
weird. And you're like, I'm not saying that right.
I'm not saying it right. I've got something wrong. So the innkeepers of the Colebrook Inn, surprise, they were actually serial killers.
That was a twist I did not see coming.
And so what they would do is they would target wealthy travelers that came through and who were traveling alone. And they would put them up in their nicest room. Well,
why would they target the wealthy and not the poor people? Come on.
You know, I mean...
Target all of them.
Just I know, kidding. Equal opportunity. So they'd put them in the nicest room, which happened to be above the kitchen. And unbeknownst to them, there was a trapdoor underneath... Yeah,
I saw that coming.
underneath the bed. And the bed was, like, I don't know, bolted to the ground. So when the men were asleep, they would spring the trapdoor and it would drop them down into a vat of boiling water.
Oh, Lord.
Which would presumably kill them.
Hopefully very quickly. Because that would, you're asleep and then all of a sudden you're falling and then you're being scalded.
Yeah, you want to hope that you hit your head or neck on the edge of that basin.
Yeah, and real just, hard as you go in.
Yeah. So then they would climb up into the room via a ladder and the trapdoor. They would take all of this person's possessions. They would dispose of the body by throwing it in a nearby river.
Okay. So... When you said above the kitchen, I was like, there's a trap door. And then they serve the person.
It
like,
gives Sweeney Todd vibes.
Yes. I mean, we have also talked about cannibalism a lot on this show.
I know.
So I'm just like, oh, these serial killers 100% are serving the meat of these corpses.
Which, honestly, wasted opportunity. Because now they're, like, why would you not?
That is a waste of meat, honestly. Like
you're having to go out and pay for food. That sounds so
horrible. Like, I do
it's a
not,
fictional story. It's
I
fine.
Do not condone this. Just saying, like, from a practical standpoint.
From an economical standpoint.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what's, like, look at the time, you know, like, in history. Well, even now, that's a mm-hmm. waste of meat with the cost of everything.
I know. Okay, so if anyone would ask about this person the next day, they would say that, oh, he got up really early in the morning and left, so like he's gone, that's why he's not here. And they would also hide the horse that he came in on, so like people wouldn't be like, well, his horse is still here.
At least they weren't killing the horses.
Well, they would eventually disguise the horse, and some of the ways, so they were like, oh, they would cut the mane or the tail. I was like, okay, it makes sense. Or they would remove an eye. And I was like, you don't
need to do that.
What if you just paint some spots on him?
I was about to say, smear some, like, ashes like, or some charcoal or something.
Yeah.
And just give it different cuts. Like, oh, it's got a gray stripe
that's
here.
That's not his horse. That horse has a black nose.
Or, oh, his horse only had, you know, black ankle socks. These have black knee socks.
Good grief. Or they're like, that horse looks exactly like his, but it is missing an eye. Stop naming horses.
Again, it's a fictional story.
Yes. So
I don't care about the rich person. I care that they wasted meat. They killed the rich person.
And then they hurt a horse.
And then they maimed a horse.
Yes.
All fictional, important.
So obviously, Thomas Cole, he's a wealthy merchant.
Mm-hmm.
So they targeted him several times as he was coming through. But by happenstance or by fate, something would always come up to thwart their plans of killing him. So one time he was about to go to bed and a messenger came riding through the town to announce that London was on fire. And this guy that he knew... his house had burned down and he had just been there and like done business with him, so he's like, I've got to go right away to London and like check on things. And another time a fight broke out between two people playing dice downstairs, and the innkeepers had to call Cole down to break up the fight, I guess because he was like the most authoritative figure at the inn. Okay.
Questionable reasoning.
Yeah, or like maybe they were just like so like busy with trying to break up the fight that they didn't have time to like boil the water and do their thing.
Yeah.
And then another time he fell ill while he was at the inn and he requested that someone come stay in his room with him to watch over him while he slept. So all of these things are happening. And then finally, he can't avoid his fate any longer. So he's coming through town one time. His horse stumbles and breaks its leg. And I'm going to say, and then they put it out to pasture.
Why are we so mean to the horses in this fictional story?
They don't say that they killed the horse. So he just goes and gets a new one. Continues his journey, but it, like, slowed him down so much that he has to stop for the night. So he stops at the Colebrook. It gets real weird from here. His nose...
It wasn't weird before?
It gets weirder. His nose suddenly starts bleeding, like, as soon as he gets to the inn. And he's, like, having such a bad day. And he's, like, so bummed out by everything that they're, like, offering him dinner. And he's, like, I can't even eat. Like, I'm so bummed. So the innkeepers are, like, trying to, like, talk to him and, like, make him feel better. And for some reason, he asks if he can write a letter. And then he, like, writes out his will. And they're, like, why did you write a will? And he's, like, oh, I meant to write a letter, but I just wrote, quote, that God put in my mind. And then he randomly starts crying. And he tells the innkeepers he's crying because his daughter had, like, begged him not to leave when he left home. And the innkeepers, I'm assuming it's the wife, she's like, okay, that's so, are you ready for bed yet? Like,
can you,
you seem to be having a rough time. Like, how about bed? And he's like, no, I don't want to go to bed. And then a bunch of musicians show up. So, like, now we're, like, kind of getting a little bit to the rhyme. I don't know.
Honestly, while you were kind of explaining the nosebleed and the letter, I was like, what is this episode about again?
Oh, this isn't even the main point of the episode.
Oh, gosh.
Anyways, musicians show up. They start playing. Whatever. He listens. He pays them. He sends them away. The innkeeper, again, is like, are you ready for bed? It's, like, 11 o'clock. And he's like, yeah, I think so. And then he, like, changes his mind. He's like, no, actually, I think I'll drink for a little bit longer. Anyways, he finally goes to bed. The husband innkeeper is like, should we kill him? He seems really sad. Like, he seems to be having a bad day.
Maybe we just give him a pass on this one.
And the wife is like, no, he's got a ton of gold. He showed it to me. Like, we're gonna kill him. So
would it be ironic if he went to bed with all of his valuables and all of the valuables ended up in the boiling vat of water?
That would be so great. But they don't, or that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So they do their thing, they kill him, they throw his body in the river, and they go for his horse, but the horse has escaped. I'm trying to run through this because this really is not the point of the story.
I can't even imagine what the point of the story is.
I know. Anyways, someone finds the horse, they recognize it. Anyways, all things come together and the innkeepers are found out because the horse got away. And they
are... It was
a
new horse, but it was a smart and loyal horse.
It was a smart horse. I know, I'm like, how did you guys recognize it? He just bought it, like, the other day.
Plot hole.
I know, plot hole.
No, it's probably, you know, the saddle or the bridle probably has markings or crest or something. And it's probably more so that than the horse itself.
Yes, I agree. That's smart. So the innkeepers are found out. They confess to killing 60 people with their trap door. And they are sentenced to death and executed. And that's like the end of that
Tell
chapter.
Me they were executed by being dropped into a vat of boiling water.
I think they were hung.
Hanged.
Hanged, sorry. And then it makes a point to say that Cole's wife...
the husband might have been hung. We don't know.
We don't know. I don't think so. I'm not going to give him that.
No, he's a murderer. He doesn't deserve...
He doesn't deserve that. I agree.
He doesn't have BDE.
It makes a point to say that his wife never remarried, but lived comfortably off of his, like...
All of his gold.
All of his stuff. And his daughter married rich and had many children. So, good for her. Okay. So, that's like a fictional story. Mm-hmm. The rhyme is certainly fictional. Mm-hmm. More than 100 years later, in 1871, real life would imitate these two fictional, well, I guess this one fictional story. This is how I'm reverse engineering it.
Okay.
Starting with a rhyme, I'm telling you possibly the origin of a rhyme, and then just...
Here's a real life thing that happened that's very similar to the potential origin of a nursery rhyme.
Yes. And I also just want to point out...
This is a weird 6 degrees of separation kind of a thing.
I know. I also want to point out that, like, we shouldn't go back to this, obviously, because we shouldn't go back to killing anyone. But interesting time where people were killing people with trapdoors, because that is the common thread here. A just interesting device to use. Mm-hmm. Seems like more work than convenience, because I don't feel like the fall is really killing anyone.
Well, one of the, I guess, benefits of... You know, or at least capturing or trapping someone with a trap door mm-hmm. is a lot of times, kind of depending on how high and what position enough. They're in when they fall, they'll potentially break their leg or injure themselves enough that escape is extremely difficult or fully impossible.
Yeah,
so, true. You know... You don't have to worry about securing whatever location they fall into too much.
Yes. So it's October of 1870, and you can look at your dossier that is not as pretty.
My dossier, not my dog CA.
Yeah, sorry.
There's no dogs on this folder. I don't know how I feel about it.
Is the first picture a map? Nope. Okay, it's fine. We'll get to it. None of these are spoilers. These are just characters. Okay. In October of 1870, John Bender...
The last picture is a map.
Oh, so I didn't put them in order. John Bender, who was around 60, and John Gebhardt, who was around 25, registered 160 acres of land in Osage, Kansas, which is in Lebbitt County, near Cherryvale. So, like, the middle thing that is starred is their location. Yes. And that's kind of all you need that for now. The rest are then pictures of our characters. So there's John Bender and John Gebhardt. Some versions of this story, they're both John Bender. One is a junior, one is a senior. There are very few reliable sources about their origins.
Senior has very strong chin, prominent chin.
Yes. So this is my disclosure.
Prominent brow bone as well.
This is my disclosure saying I'm giving you my best version of the truth. But if it's not all accurate, don't come for me. There's a bunch of different sources that say a bunch of different things. Okay, so John Sr. and John, I'm just going to call him John Jr. because that's how he was referenced.
Let's just call him Senior and Junior.
Senior and Junior. So they appeared to be related, possibly by marriage, possibly father and son. No one really knew. John Sr. was also known as John Flickinger, which is not a great last name. Allegedly, he spoke very little English and communicated through unintelligible grunts. He was described...
What language did he speak? Or did he just not speak a lot? I mean, he, like, from the pictures, very Cro-Mag looking, like I said.
Yeah.
Prominent brow bone. very, very strong, like, Neanderthal features.
We're assuming German is their language of origin.
Okay.
But again, who knows? It's just not English. He was described as, quote, a repulsive, hideous brute without a redeeming trait, dirty, profane, and ill-tempered. He was also described...
Sounds like quite a charmer.
I know, right? Over 6 feet tall, dark, deep-set eyes, bushy eyebrows, and long hair and a long beard. So that's why I included both pictures, because one, he's clean-shaven, whatever. John Jr., so John Gebhardt, or sometimes John Bender Jr. or Thomas Bender, who knows, the younger guy.
He looks like Poe.
Right? So he was, an attractive young man with auburn hair and a mustache. He's about 25-ish. He spoke fluent English with a slight German accent. He was also described as, quote, prone to laughing aimlessly. I also saw that described as laughing like a hyena, which made people think that he was intellectually deficient, which was not the word that they used.
Hmm.
But, like, he would, I guess, just kind of randomly start laughing, like, kind of manically, and people thought that that was an indication of his mental state. But there isn't really any evidence that he was, like, had any intellectual
issue. I mean, it could be that he just thought of something really funny and just was one of those people that just starts laughing at their own thoughts.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of weird for him to laugh like a hyena, but also, I mean, how common was laughing in general at this time?
Well, and also,
people probably didn't have a lot to laugh about.
Probably a big difference in, like, being, I think the word they used was, like, simple.
Mm-hmm.
And being, like, mentally disturbed. And, you know, like,
those are
different things.
But at the time, they were kind of seen as, like, the same.
Yeah, it's like, you have, like, a mental illness, it's all the same thing.
You're
not right.
Yeah. Basically, you're dumb. They just considered everyone dumb, basically.
Whereas he was actually probably pretty intelligent, but probably mentally disturbed.
Yeah, might be a little, you know, a little touch of the schizophrenia or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know enough.
You don't know enough yet.
I need a little bit more information than just randomly laughs like a hyena from time to time.
Yeah. We'll get there.
Because I also will sometimes, usually when I'm home alone and I'm like, either talking to myself in my brain or sometimes out loud, and I do something silly or I say something silly or think whatever, and I just go, ha, 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 ha. And then I'm like, realize that I'm talking and laughing to myself, and I'm like, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, that's even louder.
Yeah, no. If he's related, I'm gonna go by marriage.
By marriage, yeah.
Because, I mean, if these pictures are even semi-accurate.
Yeah.
Again, he looks like Poe.
Uh-huh.
Or Alexander Poe.
Edgar Allan Poe. I was like, who's Alexander Poe? I don't know that one.
Well, I was thinking of somebody else, and I got all the syllables in there.
Yeah.
I've had a long weekend. I'm very tired.
That's okay.
But yeah, Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah,
he's got a long, more like, long, narrow, kind of more, you know, angular face with softer features, but not soft, you know, not pudgy soft.
Yeah.
Versus the
gruff,
like more stocky, strong,
prominent
facial features.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go by, I'm going to assume marriage.
Yeah.
Is their relation.
So the land that they bought was near the Great Osage Trail, which was like a main road through the area. And it was the only open road leading west, so got a lot of traffic. And they built a small cabin, 16 feet by 24 feet by 9 feet. And there's...
That is small.
It's pretty small. And they built like a barn or whatever. And then in 1871, they sent for the rest of their family. So now we have Elvira Bender.
Mistress of the Dark?
So she was also...
I really want to dress as her for Halloween one year.
Do it.
I wonder if I could pull it off. Because I really wanted to dress as Elvira and dress Jory up as Gronk. Or aww. Gonk. Yeah, Gonk.
That'd be cute.
And he's going to have to, like, spray paint his fur pink. Get him a spiked collar.
Spray paint his fur. Poor Jory.
He would love it. He likes playing dress up with me.
Oh, okay.
He has costumes. Or he used to. We haven't had one in a while. Aww. But.
Well, Elvira also, in some sources, was Almira Mike Griffith. Or sometimes Kate, which is confusing because the other person's name is Kate. So we're going with Elvira.
That's Elvira, the Mistress of the Dark, and Gonk.
That's so cute. You can even put little pom-poms on his paws.
I could have just gotten, like, pink sweatbands
and
put them around his
That is so legs. Cute. Yep. Do it.
Do it. I kind of really want to do it.
Abandon the rest of your family. So for the purposes of our story, I'm calling this person Elvira. She was...
Also, killer name. So.
I know. A great name.
Is it literally a killer name?
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and take a sip.
Take a little drink. So she was anywhere between in her 40s or in her 50s. Who knows? She was described as, quote, very... Well, sorry, this is not a quote. this is just my words. Very unfriendly. Spoke little English. And the neighbors called her, quote, she-devil. Which is sometimes a compliment.
Or mistress of the dark.
Right? It's a shame they didn't use that.
Now I'm going to have to go look up Elvira's history again and be like... Because the woman who plays Elvira is actually a redhead.
Really?
Yeah. Because that's a wig, obviously.
Well, yeah, obviously. But still.
Her name's like Cassandra or something like that.
Oh, that's a great name too. Cassandra.
And I gotta go figure out where she came up with the character Elvira.
Yeah.
If it's from this story, then awesome. But unlikely, probably.
Well, I'm gonna describe the way that Elvira looks.
So far, like, personality-wise, she sounds perfect for senior. Sound like they are two peas in a pod.
Oh, man. Well, one description of her was, quote, a fit picture of the midnight hag that wove the spell murderous ambition about the soul of Macbeth.
Well, that is very poetic.
Uh-huh.
A poetic doesn't tell me at all what she looks like, but sure. I mean, we need to get Albert Ostman in here to describe her.
He could do it. Describe her very well. We would know
what she looked like, yeah. And her, you know, brassiere situation.
I was gonna say, we know about her bosoms,
and whether she was built for beauty and or speed,
and or neither. Mm-hmm. In one description, she was tall and thin, with gray hair that was, quote, ragged at the ends and thin over the temples. Which, rude. My hair is also like that sometimes. It's called overstyling.
Mine is also just thin, fine hair that gets damaged.
Like, she wasn't going to the salon often. It's fine. I don't know why I'm sticking up for her. She's not a good person. This is like a sticking
you're,
up for the murderers.
You're sticking up for...
Her hair description. The description people, of women.
People with hair similar to hers. Yeah.
Not all hair. Not all people with bad hair. another description of her said she was heavy set. So I don't know what she actually looked like. There is a picture of her similar to the other ones. Sorry. She was said to have sinister eyes, which I like that description. She claimed to be a medium and, able to concoct potions or cast spells. And allegedly she ran the household and invoked fear in her husband and children.
Okay, I kind of like that.
I know, right? I'm like, okay, all right, go for
respect
it.
Respect and invoke fear in your husband. Not so much your children. I don't like that. I don't want my kids to be afraid of me.
And then our final character is Kate Bender, who's also sometimes known as Eliza Griffith. She was, I don't know why she gets the most definitive age, 23.
So it's funny how, like, this picture of Ma Bender, Elvira, like 100% she looks like she belongs with
Pa Bender,
with senior.
Yeah.
And then Kate here, very pretty.
Very pretty.
Looks like she definitely belongs with junior.
Yes.
Like 100%.
Very much.
But there is no... I mean, again, these are drawings.
Yeah. They're
so
sketches.
So, like, you can only gauge how accurate they are. But I don't see any familial resemblance. Mm-hmm. So, like...
Between any of them?
Because there's no way that either Junior or Kate are the child of...
Right.
Senior and Elvira.
Yeah. Well, Kate was described as attractive... A cultivated woman who spoke fluent English, also with a slight German accent. She was a spiritualist. I think she also considered herself a medium. She was a self-proclaimed healer and psychic. She would conduct seances. She would give lectures on spiritualism, which...
I mean, this was the time of the spiritualism movement.
Yes. Like,
everyone was a medium.
She also advocated for free love. She publicly stated in at least one lecture that, quote, murder might be a dictation for good. And it was also rumored based...
Well, that's an interesting point to make right after you said she advocated for free love.
Yeah, I probably should have put that at the end.
I mean, that's just like a, okay, well, that's interesting. Tell me more about her beliefs on that.
Yeah.
I mean, what is free love in the 1870s standards?
I think it was like, sleep with whoever you want to.
So... what we all assume it is.
Yeah, but a lot of people thought, or like it was said that they like presented as like a family of like mom, dad, brother, sister. So like her and John Jr. I think presented as siblings. But there were rumors based on some of the stuff she said in her lectures that they were actually or that they were sleeping together, either despite being siblings or that they were not actually siblings and were just, like, lovers. So, her and John Jr., I think, are banging.
All right. Regardless of their...
Regardless of their relationship to each other.
Yeah.
They're probably sleeping together.
Cool.
Yeah, cool.
Neat. Rad.
We don't advocate that far into free love, but...
Nope.
You know.
Sleep with whoever you want. Within reason.
Within reason.
Outside of your family.
Yeah. So, they divided their little cabin into two rooms using a canvas wagon cover. The smaller back room was their living quarters and, like, bedroom. And then the front room was set up as a general store. I think one of your pictures is, like, a diagram of... the cabin. So it's just very small. Oh yeah, there's a picture of everything. It's very small. I do have one actual photograph in there. Good for me. And so in the front, they had a sign out front that said grocery, but it's spelled grocery. They sold saddles, clothes, and horses, and it also functioned as a bed and breakfast, even though it's, like, the smallest establishment.
A bed.
Yep. So people, travelers, like, passing by on this pretty well-traveled road could stop, they could have a meal, and they could spend the night, essentially.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, just leave the benders... where they're at for a minute. Did you have something to say?
No, okay. I'm happy to leave them. Okay. Incestuous weirdos.
Yeah. So in May of 1871, the body of a man, only known as Jones, was found in Drum Creek, which I didn't actually look up where that was, but like nearby that area. His skull had been crushed and his throat was cut.
Brutal.
Yeah. And then February of the following year, 1872, two more bodies were discovered, I think nearby, with the same injuries. And by this point, the area had kind of become notorious for, like, missing travelers, which wasn't super strange because it's the 1870s in the middle of Kansas.
Mm-hmm. The Wild West.
Kinda. Yeah, it's like people could have... you know, gotten lost or, you know, gotten attacked by bandits or cowboy. I don't know.
Travel was dangerous in general.
Yes. And so this area was just, like, known as being particularly dangerous. And so a lot of people avoided it because they're like, you go the Osage Trail, a lot of people don't get to where they're going.
Yeah.
So a lot of the disappearances that were happening were just kind of credited to, like, regular... traveling hazards.
Yep. They could have, like you said, gotten lost, could have been attacked by coyotes,
yeah,
or bandits, or
yeah,
serial killer. Yeah, incestuous serial killers.
Serial killer innkeepers. just
again, at least they're not eating them.
That's true, as far as we can tell. Yeah. So in the fall,
or at least not cooking their meat into and selling their
that's true
corpses into to other people.
That would be wild if I could tie in that that other episode to to this one too, but I can't.
I'm thankful for that.
So in the fall slash winter of 1872, a man named Johnny Boyle left Osage in search of land to buy and was never heard from again. Also a man named Henry McKenzie, who was a 29-year-old Civil War vet, set out to visit his sister in Independence, Kansas, and he never made it. And then two other men, Ben Brown and William McCrotty, also disappeared while traveling in the area and around that time. And then in the spring of 1873, a man named George Newton Longcore disappeared while traveling from Independence, Kansas to Iowa. And the following spring, his neighbor, whose name was Dr. William Henry York, was like, I'm going to go look for him, because I guess they were also friends. So Dr. York sets out. He went about 100 miles to Fort Scott, Kansas, before turning back. I think those are, that's the place that I marked.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets that far, and he's like, well, I didn't find him, so I'm going to turn around, I guess. So he turns back on March 9th, 1873.
Excuse me? Critter's birthday? You can't be having horrible things happen on Critter's birthday.
Nothing horrible happened probably that day. It's okay. Just the day he turned around.
Okay.
But he never makes it back to Independence. And when he failed to return, his brothers, named Ed York and Colonel Alexander York, who was a Civil War vet and a senator.
I thought you were going to say his brothers and, like, Peppermint and Patty.
No, that'd be hilarious, though. They set out to find him. They're like, we care about our brother, and so we're going to find him. So Colonel York led a group of about 50 men on this, like, search. And they're like, we're just going to search, like, where he was traveling, mm-hmm. like the road he was traveling.
We're, yeah, like we knew the route that he was taking. We're just going to follow his footsteps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pretty smart. So on March 28th, Colonel York and a member of the search party arrived at the Bender's Inn to ask if they had seen Dr. York, the brother. And according to an article in the Weekly Kansas Chief newspaper, the Benders, quote, would tell nothing. They were just, I guess they, I don't know if that means, like, they said, we don't know what you're talking about, or
literally grunted and growled.
Yeah,
and
or, like, we refuse to tell you anything.
Yeah. Because that's not suspicious.
I know. Well, and so they came back a
that's when you're
days
like,
later.
What does he look like? Yeah. Like, when he would have been through here, what, last week? Let's mm-hmm. see, last week. There, I kind of remember a guy who might be that. I think we sold him some lunch, and that was it.
Well,
that's how you make a passing.
Yeah,
you just. I think I remember. Sounds familiar. Sounds yeah. vaguely familiar, but like it's not memorable enough. He was here.
Yeah,
we sold him something, and he was gone, and that's all I can tell you. That's a convincing cover story.
Yeah. I also just realized maybe when they got there, only John Sr. and Elvira were there, and they literally...
Again, grunts.
...couldn't say anything yeah, articulate. So, anyways, they come back on April 3rd. So a couple days later, they come back with more members of the party, and they're like, we're gonna try again and ask... So it is documented that Elvira sat by silently, so she's not saying anything, and she appears to not understand anything that's going on. So, like, the assumption is not only does she not speak English, but she also doesn't understand it.
Oh, no. She understands.
Kate, meanwhile, denied knowing anything about Dr. York's disappearance. She's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I just
work here.
I was practicing free love. Like, I don't know. And then
I might have hooked up with him. Who knows?
Who knows? A lot of people. And John Jr. took your advice and was like, oh, a few weeks ago, maybe I saw him. He was like, I was actually out near Drum Creek. Like, no one was around. I was out there and someone shot at me. So, like, maybe those people, like, got a hold of your brother. Like, no, I don't know.
See, that's too big of a story. It's too big specific. Of a lie. That's, yeah. And it's just too strange.
Yeah.
And, like, people don't just randomly shoot at other people and then let you get away. Like, no, that's... That's too big of a story. It's got to be
details.
It's got to be small. It's got to be insignificant. And there's got to be nothing to it. Like, yeah, he came in. He asked for, you know, some lunch or, you know, some more food for the road. If you remember that.
Yeah. Do you remember the line from Newsies? Where he was here, but he made like an egg. Is it he made like an egg? Or he put an egg in his shoe and beat it. Katie and I watched Newsies last week. It was Katie's first time. She's no longer a Newsies virgin. It was amazing. I feel like it was life-changing.
It was definitely great.
We had a weird conversation about...
We have lots of weird conversations. I mean, just listen to this episode.
About the probably 14-year-old boy... that I had a crush on, and we're like talking about all the things we like about him, but as our 12-year-old selves.
Yeah, no, it's like I can see my 14-year-old self having a crush on this boy.
Yeah,
because he looks very similar to the other boys that I had a crush on when I was 12, 13, 14. Yes. Like,
in my case,
I'm not attracted to him now because he is a little boy, and I'm not attracted to little boys.
It was a weird conversation. I think we determined it was the eyebrows and the smirk.
It was only a weird conversation because we had to put in a lot of, like, clarifying language.
To each other. We're the only people in the room.
And, it, like, 100%, like, we don't judge each other for anything. Except maybe, I don't know, food choices.
Yeah.
I might judge you for that. You might judge me for that.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's okay. But, like, we understand each other.
We got where
we don't judge
from.
Each other. Yeah. So, like, we could 100% say, like, oh, he's so cute. And understand that.
Yeah. He's cuter without his hat.
I said that. I said, oh, he's cuter now that he doesn't have the hat, now that I've seen his hair.
Because, and I disagreed.
But... And the reason I said he was cuter with the hair is because his hair, again, resembled the same, like, 90s hairstyle.
The Devon Sawa hair.
Like, the Devon Sawa or the Jonathan Taylor Thomas, luscious Thomas. Locks that I found attractive as a 13-year-old girl.
Yes, agreed.
So, and it was just like, we don't need all this clarifying language. Like, we both know that we're not attracted to little boys.
Oh my gosh. I also want to tell everyone about our new rule for movie night.
Oh yeah.
Which is we're taking a break from the cheesy...
The drive-in classics box set that have
apparently given you some deep-seated trauma. And now our rule is what are we calling it? The 6 degrees rule?
I think so.
So
or Kevin Bacon. We're playing Kevin Bacon now.
Yeah. Hey everyone, it's Hannah. I wanted to quickly ask if you are enjoying the podcast, please leave us a 5-star review. It goes a long way in getting the show in front of other listeners. If you listen on a platform that doesn't do reviews, please follow us on social media, like the show, or leave a comment. Thank you. We love you guys and we hope you enjoy the show. So, the next movie has to have an actor from the previous movie in it.
So, you know, I've been talking up Swing Kids.
Uh-huh.
And now after watching Newsies, it's like, oh, that's, you know, Christian Bale. And then the year after Newsies came out, Swing Kids came out.
Yeah. So, that's our next one.
So, we're going to do Swing Kids next. Uh-huh. And then... Sean, what is his name? Sean something. He's also Dr. House's best friend.
Yes. That's how I know him.
That's how, like, I'm like, this is the best way to most people will recognize him as. What is the movie that, oh, Dead Poets Society.
Dead Poets Society.
And we're like, after, you know, Swing Kids, which is a great movie,
Robert
but it's
Sean
about
Leonard. That's his
Robert
name.
Robert Sean Leonard. Okay. After Swing Kids, which is a great movie, but mm-hmm. also about Nazis.
Yeah, it's worried about it.
A little heavy. And then we go into Dead Poets Society, yeah. which is
also pretty
also
heavy.
Really heavy. We're like, ooh, we might need to lighten the mood. I was like, wait, but Robin Williams
We're
is
gonna
in.
We're going to pick a great Robin Williams movie after that.
So, yeah.
It really opens up a lot of doors, so
yeah.
And I'm excited.
We can do animated films, too. Like, we could do Aladdin if we wanted to
right.
for the Robin Williams.
But then who are we going to pick from Aladdin?
What's her face? Iago.
Oh.
Oh, God. Why can't I think of his name right now?
Oh, you know what? If we do Mrs. Doubtfire, then we can pick Matthew Lawrence and, like, yeah. jump into something.
I was also thinking, who's the wife? Who's the mom? I should know her name.
Oh. Hold on.
I'm still stuck on Iago. Like, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Gilbert Gottfried.
Ah, yeah.
Sally Field is the mom.
Sally Field, yes. Mm-hmm. God, my brain is not working.
Pierce Brosnan's in it too. A lot of great options.
Oh yeah, forgot about that one.
Man, all I can think about though with Mrs. Doubtfire is Mrs. Featherbottom, which is part of the reason I think mm-hmm. I like it. Oh, how did we get on this topic?
Movies, newsies, put, a
oh,
egg
put
in
an
a
egg
shoe
in a shoe
and
beat
it.
Okay, got it. We worked backwards. We got it.
Kind of like with this episode.
Exactly, yeah. John Jr., even, like, he really doubles down on the story, and he takes them to the place where
he's getting too involved. Don't get involved in it. Like,
he needs to backpedal.
Guilty people try to insert themselves in investigations. Mm-hmm. He needs mm-hmm. to step back.
Yeah. So, it says that they, like, kind of believed his story. They're like, maybe,
like,
but, like,
I can believe that, but also it's very weird.
Feels a little weird.
A little fanciful.
Yeah.
He's inserted himself into this kind of, like,
he's
fanciful
making up
story.
Something even wilder than, yeah. Like, what could just be played off as, like, a normal disappearance.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, he passed through, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
Vaguely remember.
No, he didn't. Mm-hmm. Never heard of him. Like, never seen him.
It's possible, but I don't remember him.
Yeah.
It was, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, like,
we see, you know.
We see a lot of people.
We see a decent amount of people come through here, so, like.
Yeah. So, John Jr. also tells Colonel York, because he cannot stop talking, I guess. He's like,
he probably thinks he's too smart.
Probably. He's like, oh, my sister, Kate, quote, could do anything. And that she could control the devil and that the devil did her bidding. So Colonel York asks Kate, he's like, can you use these alleged powers to, like, figure out where my brother is? And I think at this point they are assuming that the brother is dead. So he's like, can you use your powers to, like, find his body? Or, like,
you're,
you know,
a medium,
like,
so can you let's talk to his spirit, see what's going on.
And Kate said, oh, of course I can do that, but I can't actually do any of that during the day, and there's also too many people around. I just...
Convenient.
Satan doesn't really like to work during the day, but if you come back
He's
next
more of a night
week,
owl.
Yeah, he really gets his best work done at nighttime. Hmm. She said, but if you come back next week with not so many people with you.
And I've had time to put together a little pyrotechnic show.
Yeah. Then I could definitely tell you where your brother's body is. So just, like, come back later and don't have so many probably armed men with you. Just, like,
we also need time to go and recover his body from where we dumped it and then put it in a different location.
Yeah.
So that we can specify where it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So Colonel York also, he's like a pretty good investigator to his credit. He also asks the family specifically about a report he had heard about a woman the previous month who had stopped at the Bender Inn while traveling and asked to stay and rest for a bit. So I don't think she was planning on spending the night. She's like, I just need a nap. Like, can I just hang out here for a minute? And they're like, sure, come back to this bed. So while she slept, she says that Elvira woke her up, pointed to the dinner table where there were various knives and pistols laid out, and then said, there, your supper is ready, which is convenient because I thought Elvira did not speak English. And then, quote, she picked up the knives one by one and drew her finger along the sharpened blades, at the same time glancing fiendishly at her intended victim. And so the woman is just like sitting up in bed, like,
I'm gonna go.
In fear for several minutes. And then she's like, I need to use the bathroom. Can I go outside and do that? And they're like, yeah, sure. Go right outside. So she goes outside and then runs away, obviously. She runs.
Yeah. Go hop on your horse and get the heck out of there.
She runs 2 miles barefoot to, like, the nearest place she can find.
Oh, Lord.
And, like, tells them what happened. And everyone's like, okay, we kind of believe you. The quote about the story was, quote, even this story seems not to have aroused more than the before existing suspicion that the Benders were not exactly the right kind of people.
Yeah.
So everyone is just like, yeah, well, the Benders are weird.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if all of those details happened, but it's a little believable. Yeah. I mean, you also did run 2 miles barefoot. Yeah. So like,
they're like, are you sure you have all the details?
Something happened that freaked you out, and we'll believe that.
Yeah. But she was also a woman. She could have been having that hysteria.
Yeah.
You know how that happens.
She might have just had a bad dream and woke up and was in a tizzy. Like,
women be getting confused.
You want some more wine?
Sure. Okay, so the Benders are not the right kind of people is where we stop.
Got it. All right.
So Colonel York is like relaying the story and is like, well, what about this? Like, you know, someone said that you guys were like really sketchy. And
did Junior have a nice fanciful story for that too? Like, oh, she woke up screaming and flew out of here, you know, she must have had a bad dream, and then I went outside to try to, you know, catch her and help calm her down. But and then already people started shooting at me again,
so I had to get back inside. Yeah. No, actually, interestingly, Elvira has something to say about this. Because she suddenly, quote, found her sense of the English language improved.
And I love, like, that is snark right there.
That is such
that
a,
is
yeah.
1800s snark. Like, oh, how convenient. You all of a sudden can speak English much better.
Yeah. So she got real mad. She denied the whole incident. Then she said that woman was actually a witch, and actually she, quote, bewitched Kate's coffee, and I'm gonna kill her if I ever see her again because
okay.
So
that's one of those things that, like, you're being interviewed, like, I know that Colonel York isn't, like, an official, you know, police detective right now. But, like, you don't tell the cops or anyone investigating that
you're gonna
kill somebody. Like, you have the intent to murder a person. If you ever see them again, you'll kill them. Like, don't.
It's like, especially because your daughter has already publicly stated that she thinks sometimes murder's okay.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe let's try to downplay this. So they leave the Bender's house, and, like, all of the people in the search party, all of these men, are convinced that the Benders and probably another family nearby whose name were the Roaches, unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, they're probably guilty. We should arrest them. We should, you know, whatever. And Colonel York is like, we have to have actual evidence. So, like, calm down. Like, I agree they're probably guilty, but, like, we got to gather evidence.
They're weird.
They're definitely weird.
But does it mean guilty? Like, definitely suspicious. Mm-hmm. We are keeping them on our list of suspects, but, like, let's continue the investigation. Mm-hmm. Let's narrow things down. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the next one down the road where brother might have been. Maybe they won't be as weird.
Yeah. Maybe, like, well, yeah. He's like, let's continue. So several weeks later, and this timeline, by the way, will be confusing in a minute, but sometime later, Osage has a town meeting to discuss the disappearances and to figure out what to do about them. So they decide that they're going to get search warrants for every homestead, between Big Hill Creek and Drum Creek. So, like, you're just going to find a judge who's going to give you a search warrant for every house along the road, and you're going to go legally search.
I mean, well, I guess it said homestead, and I'm sure there's a lot of homesteads that have done something similar as the Benders, where they've made a storefront and a kind of bed and breakfast.
Yeah.
But there's probably a lot of other homesteads that are working more as a farm than any other kind of, you know, grocery or bed and breakfast. So, like, I doubt those would be checked.
Yeah. And I'm like, props for going, like, the legal route, but also, who's this judge that, as someone who has seen every episode of Law and Order SVU, who's this judge that's just
this is signing off on warrants? 1800s, and, you know, like, sure, it's a legal procedure, but, you know, how...
Yeah, I guess.
How strict are... how hard is it to really do these things?
Yeah. So
how much probable cause do you really need?
Exactly. True. So 3 days later, after this meeting, a man named Billy Toll is, like, passing on the trail or whatever. And he passes by the Benders and he notices that it is abandoned. Mostly because they've abandoned their, like, livestock and it's dying, which I don't know why this story is so full of, like,
cool. Like, this
hurting animals.
And these are actual animals, though. Yeah, this is not like a real story. Ones.
It's true.
So now we get to really be upset.
Yeah,
you know, like, was upset about the fictional animals.
I know. I think he saw, like, a calf that had, like, starved to death. He's like, oh, this is weird. So he goes back and reports it to the township trustee, and they organize a group to go investigate. But because it's the 1870s and the middle of the prairie, bad weather happens and they're like, we can't go for a while. So when they're finally able to go out, which one source says that all of this is happening in December, I cannot imagine that it has been 6 months, so I'm gonna say that the town hall meeting happened later. I don't know.
Well, so in the prairie, like, I, you know, when you said bad weather, we can't go for a while, 100% I'm thinking, oh, big snow. Because they also get some big thunderstorms and stuff, and unless there was some big, like, some flooding, like, there might be some flash flooding, but it would recede pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, they wouldn't be able to go while it's storming or while it's flooding, but, like, the floodwaters would recede really quickly, so they could go, like... Unless the roads were super muddy and, you know, the horses couldn't hack it. But I would imagine it would be winter and there would be snow. Hence why weather would delay.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. So when they finally go out, several hundred people go out to, like, investigate. I don't know why so many. It's a small cabin.
I didn't think there was that many people in that area.
I know.
Like,
it's like everyone is there.
Small township, right?
I feel like maybe, like, I don't know. I feel like maybe a handful of them were there to investigate, and the rest were maybe just like, oh, something cool's happening. Like, let's follow.
I'm bored.
Yeah, I'm bored. But Colonel York is among the ones presumably there to, like, do something. So they get there. The cabin has been cleared out. And also, there's a smell in the cabin. So, they follow the smell and they find a trapdoor underneath the bed. Which now I'm thinking, like, okay, did they read that story? Because
right?
It's getting really specific.
Or, I mean, I feel like I've heard trapdoor under the bed as mm-hmm. kind of like a trope or something, or like,
yeah,
I feel like it's one of those urban legend, like, story pieces that has been passed around enough that they probably, like, heard it yeah. from somebody and were like, oh, that's
under the bed is a scary place, by the way. Also, speaking of trapdoors underneath the bed, do you remember, I think it was last summer when we had the rat under our house mm-hmm. and sometimes it would get into our house via our air vents, which is very scary. So since then we had, because it got into the guest room one time and it like pushed the whole air vent off and like it was extremely traumatizing and disgusting. Anyways, since then,
where was Kelly during all of this? Not doing her job.
Because I just went into that room one day and found, like, mouse droppings all over the bed and freaked out. But our air vents are, like, janky in this house. We're slowly replacing all of them. So I was so over that situation. So I put a baking sheet over the air vent and then stacked a bunch of books on top of it. I was like, this room just won't get mm-hmm. air. And it was fine because no one sleeps in there. And, like, I would sometimes sleep in there, but it'd be, like, during the winter, whatever. Well, since we had Luke over last night and he stayed the night, I was like, I gotta make sure this room gets air, I guess. So I like crawled under the bed, which is why I know it's a scary place to be. And I like uncovered the vent. And then I found out the vent just like is essentially a trapdoor. It literally just comes off. It's not attached to anything.
That's how our air vents are too.
It was a trapdoor for the rat. Anyways, I duct taped it to the ground now. So the room gets air and also presumably is safe from rats.
Rat proof.
So I had a trapdoor under my bed too. Okay. So they find this trapdoor. It's nailed shut. There's a bad smell coming from it. So they open it and they find a room under the floor that is 6 feet by 7 feet by 3 feet. One source.
So is it? I think it's, how deep is it? Which one of those is deep?
I think it's 3 feet deep.
Okay.
I think it's 6 by 7 and then with a 3 foot.
Mm. So hands. you got like crouch and all basically yeah. crawl.
Yeah, so it's a crawl space where rats might live. So many sources said that they found clotted blood on the floor, which is made of stone. Another source said that they found, quote, a mass of decomposing human remains. Which I think if we meet in the middle, it means that, like, maybe, like, tissue and blood was found. Because they're specific that there aren't bodies.
Yeah, so, and again, like, you kind of got to look at the timeline mm-hmm. for this. Like, because if they're just, like, kind of keeping the bodies under there to the point where they're starting to decompose, mm-hmm. they're going to have a smell. That smell's yeah. going to linger. Like, yeah. no one's going to want to stay there
yeah.
with that smell.
Yeah.
So, like, how long between the last time somebody came through
mm-hmm. versus
like and now. Until you know like it was abandoned, like when did they potentially abandon it with
right
body parts? Anyways
the main point is that there's not actual bodies in there, but there is suspicious biological
yeah
material. So they break up the floor because they're like, there's got to be bodies like underneath here or like something, but there's mm-hmm. not any bodies. No. So then they take a metal rod and they begin probing the ground around the cabin, and they even like pick up the house and move it to the side so that they can like dig around it. I'm so fascinated by the fact that we used to just like pick up houses and move them, because we've got a bunch of houses like that in here. Mm-hmm.
There was like the free house that got moved.
That's true. Yeah, that was a good spectacle.
It didn't get moved by the hurricane.
No, I know. Shocking.
I still I this is one of those times that I just laugh to myself when I think about it. There's that old house. It was free house. Like, you just have to move it. You can have the house. And, I mean, it was so old and run down. It looked like, you know, a strong breeze would knock it down.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Hurricane Florence, that notoriously did knock down a lot of houses and really wreak havoc on a lot of places, couldn't touch the house.
Didn't,
and so somebody spray painted on the side of the house, said free house 1, Florence 0. And that, every time I think of that, I giggle to myself.
Yeah. And then someone did buy the house, or take possession of the house and moved it down the road, and it was the whole thing. I'm also thinking there's a really pretty house somewhere down. It's one of those nice neighborhoods we walk Kelly through sometimes. And it's got one of those historical plaques, and it's, like, built in, you know, like, I don't know, 17 whatever. And then it's, like, moved 1972 or something. I'm like, huh, interesting. Okay, so they've moved the house. They're digging around. They're not finding anything, but they know something has gone on because they found, like, the gross cellar.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, I know it's decomposing remains, but, like, can they somehow verify that it's human remains and not some of the animals? That's because they had livestock?
Yeah. I don't think so. Everything I read just seemed to say that it's mostly identifiable as blood.
Mm-hmm.
But they also began to probe the garden around the cabin. They had a big, I think it was an apple orchard. And in the garden, their probe hits something, and they dig it up, and it is Dr. York. And he's buried face down. His feet are barely covered by the soil, so it's like a very shallow grave that he's found in. And so now they're like, oh, we found the right place to look.
So, and again, question of timeline on this. How, like... how long has it been since he was missing? Because, I mean, if it was a shallow grave, and it's been a while, like, unless he went missing in the winter and they found him in the winter.
Well, that's why the timeline's so confusing.
His remains would probably be very, rather decomposed to the point where he might be unidentifiable. Like, unless they're IDing him because of his clothing or belongings.
Yeah. I think he was fairly decomposed. According to the dates that I have, he went missing in March, and it's now December. But also, according to some notes, it's, like, only been a couple months. So,
but even still, if he went missing in March and was found, like, let's say, you know, August.
Yeah.
In a shallow grave throughout the summer, like,
yeah, like,
he's gonna be gross.
Yeah, he's gonna be gross.
So I'm gonna assume they probably had to ID him through clothing and belongings.
Yeah. Well, they're like, let's just keep looking around here, because now we're very suspicious.
I mean, they got real lucky. The first one they found was the guy they were looking for.
Yeah, it's true. So they keep probing the ground until midnight, and they mark off 9 other suspected graves. And the following morning,
I'm just curious about, like, when how they determine a unique place just by sticking a metal rod in the ground. Like,
well, I think
is it because the soil is kind of loose, or does it crunch a certain way?
Yeah, I'm assuming that it,
or does it hits pick up
something?
Like, or is it a hollow tube that they look at what's in the core and they're like, ooh, that's not dirt. I think I did read
something about, like, something, it came up and it had, like, I don't know, blood or something on it. And so they, I don't know, rudimentary way.
So they're doing core samples and, like, oh, that's not soil.
That's not soil, yeah. So have 9 other places where they dig. The following morning, they find 8 bodies in 7 of the marked areas.
Oh boy, there was a twofer.
Yeah. Another source said that there were 7 in 5 graves. Another source just said...
A couple of twofers.
Another said just 9 more bodies. So, okay. I don't know. One body they found was in a well with, quote, several body parts that they didn't further specify on, but the body parts did not belong to any of the other bodies that they found.
So just bonus parts.
Just bonus parts. So maybe they were eating people. I don't know. Because they don't, spoiler, they don't find the, there's not enough parts to put together a whole person, and they don't.
Can you guarantee that, like, okay, yeah, we've got 2 arms, but they don't look the same.
They don't look the same, yeah.
They don't, I don't think they came from the same body.
Yeah, but, like, they definitely don't, there's not enough parts to piece together whole people, mm-hmm. and they don't ever find the other parts.
Yeah.
So, they very well could have, I guess, been eating, but that's never mentioned in anywhere mm-hmm. in this.
Or serving and, like, selling. The...
Yes. Yeah.
It could have been an experiment to try, you know, that opening up that business avenue that didn't just work, so yeah. they just tossed out the leftovers.
Yeah. Well, ugh.
Well, look how we can be so cavalier about this topic. Ugh.
So all but one of the bodies they found had the skulls crushed and the throats slit. All of them, one newspaper reported that they were all, quote, indecently mutilated. I don't know. Nothing else, like, really elaborated on that. So I don't know if they're just saying, like, well, their heads were crushed and their throats were cut and that's being mutilated. Because I don't get the impression that they were, like, carved up and, like, mm-hmm. disemboweled and stuff like that.
I'm wondering, like, indecent makes me think, like, genitals or other things, because it's all, is it all men or is there some women too?
Oh, let me read you the list of victims.
Okay, because
that's my next,
you know, also around this time, like, showing too much ankle skin was also indecent.
Very true. Okay, so we have Ben Brown, who was one of the people we mentioned earlier, Johnny Boyle, another one of our previous people. He was the one they found in the well. George Longcore, and his daughter, Marianne, which I didn't mention for a reason because I didn't want to bum everyone out. She was either a baby or she was an 8-year-old. So sorry. I'm really sorry about that.
Move on.
Sorry. Okay. John Greery, Red Smith, and Abigail Roberts. So we got at least one woman. And then Henry McKenzie, and William McCrotty, who we also mentioned earlier. The body parts added up to at least 3 different people, which, again, they never found the mm-hmm. additional pieces. They also attributed 4 John Does that were found in Drum Creek to the Benders, and then there were 2 more John Does that were found on the prairie that were also, like, heads bashed in, throats cut. So,
same MO.
Yeah. So they searched the cabin more thoroughly, now that they...
Did they put it back where it was?
I don't think so, actually. So they find 3 hammers. A shoe hammer, a claw hammer, and a sledgehammer.
I don't know what a shoe hammer looks like.
I don't either, but I think it's like a small...
Okay.
Well, what a cobbler would use for mm-hmm. making shoes. And if you're interested, those are currently on display at the Cherry Vale Museum. Mm. There was also a 4-inch knife. Love that we get to talk about...
4-inch
knife. Knife size. The blade was 4 inches.
That's gotta be the blade. 4-inch knife is useless.
I know, right?
You need, like, 3 inches for the handle. It's a 1-inch blade.
4 inches is useless.
You're turning red.
I'm so sorry. I'm really warm, too.
It's the wine.
Yeah, we'll go with that. So that knife was found in a mantle clock, which... Why did you guys leave all your murder weapons behind?
Why are you hiding in a mantle clock?
I don't know. The knife is at the Kansas Museum of History. It's not on display, but you can ask to see it. So you have to go in specifically, I think, and be like, can I see that 4-inch knife?
And the museum docent will be like, I get off at 6. Get me out back.
Gross. And then you'll say, no, thank you. I'm not calling the police. Not that knife. Calling the police. And apparently the knife still has reddish brown stains on the blade. Don't love. Meanwhile, there's like a huge crowd at this crime scene.
That reminds me of when I was in middle school, we took a field trip to the state capitol. Mm-hmm. So we went to Baton Rouge. And we got to stand in the hallway where Huey P. Long was shot.
Oh, that's fun.
And I actually found one of the bullet holes in the marble.
Oh, gosh.
It was, like, behind the column, so it was, like, one of the, like, ricochet bullet holes. And I believe they actually filmed a movie, like, depicting the whole thing there.
Oh, wow.
Like, you know, on scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I vaguely remember finding some reddish brown spots kind of like on the wall. And I'm thinking, like, obviously it's been way too long. Like, there's no way that that's his blood. They've cleaned that area too many times for it to be his blood. But I'm thinking it's possible it's like some staining from like some fake movie blood.
Oh, yeah.
Let's but again, that's middle schoolers' memory. We've talked about how, like, the more times you access that memory,
The more it changes.
The more it changes, the more it's faded. But I do remember seeing, like, the bullet hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I remember seeing, like, a reddish-brown stain or, like, a couple spots or stains. Yeah. But again, that could be also attributed to any number of other things.
True.
It could be some other previous tourist spilled something. It could be some other person got a bloody nose.
But in your middle school brain, it was
fake blood from the movie.
Or real blood.
Even my middle school brain was like, realistically, that's not his blood.
See, my middle school brain would have been like, oh my gosh, this is it. Okay, so there's a ton of people.
You also would have freaked that time that we were doing the Stations of the Cross and Mass, and one of the marble things where they were standing in front of, they watched a real dark reddish brown tinge little droplet go down from the Thorn of Crowns.
Really?
I haven't told you this
No.
story. Yeah. So we were doing Stations of the Cross. It's a Catholic thing. Don't ask me details. I don't remember them. But basically, there's these marble carvings depicting the, like, trial and, subsequent execution of Jesus and, like, his walk with the cross to the hill. And so there's, like, three people. Like, one person holds a cross and two other people stand on the other side. They're holding handles and they just stand in front of this marble carving. It's basically just like a big picture.
Yeah.
And they stand there while somebody like reads a story and then we all say a prayer and like it's a thing.
Yeah.
And then they move on to the next and stand in front and we talk about that one. But yeah, while they were standing in front of the, while he's being nailed to the cross, you see, we could see a drop of reddish brown liquid, just one little drop, and it started right at his forehead, right at the crown of thorns, went down his forehead to his eyebrow, skipped his eyebrow, continued down his cheek, all the way to his chin, skipped down, landed kind of like on his chest around like his pectorals, went all the way down his belly. He's wearing like a loincloth basically. Of course, yeah. Skipped the cloth and continued a little way down his thigh.
Dang.
And the interesting, fun, cool thing for me, like everyone was like, oh my god, it's a miracle, blah 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 blah. My school was on the news. It was a whole thing.
Oh, geez.
But right outside the chapel, there's an oil painting of Jesus nailed to the cross.
Yeah.
And in that picture, there's one drop of blood from the crown of thorns that goes down his forehead to his eyebrow, skips hits his cheek, goes down to his chin, skips, hits his chest, goes all the way down, skips the waist, and partially down his leg. Like, the exact same trajectory. Do you want to know what it was?
Was it, thinking like discolored water, dirty water?
They had been pressure washing the outside of the building. And, you know, there was some cracks in the bricks.
Uh-huh.
And all of, you know, some of the water got through the cracks.
Uh-huh.
And then there was some, like, rusted metal brackets, like, yeah, in between, mm-hmm, the walls and whatnot. And so a lot of water collected there mixed with the rusty metal brackets. So it was rust water.
That's hilarious.
And the reason that it fell in so much, like, a didn't just, like, drip straight down, yeah, is because the way the marble carving, uh-huh, was... is just gravity. It was like, it was a high point here, and yeah, it, you know, and like, you know, to his eyebrow, and then his eye was, you know, further it, yeah, in, so it just dropped straight down,
yeah,
to the next, you know, most protruding point, which, yeah, was his cheek. So
that's hilarious.
But yeah, like, oh, we had a whole bunch of visitors coming to our school, and lots of people in the chapel, like, wanting to see it, and then, oh, like, God, praying, because, oh my God, it's a miracle, and blah, 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 and all the nuns were freaking out, and I was just like, guys. Like, if I'm not getting out of class for this,
oh yeah,
don't waste my time. Like, there is... This is, like, there is an explanation for this. And I was like, honestly, my first thought was, it's a prank of some kind. Like, yeah, it's a really ingenious prank, and I want to know how you did it. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah. But.
But it's not real. It's not a thing.
There is an episode of Dairy Girls that has that same plot line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever watched.
Mm-mm.
It's very funny. Very underrated. But it the girls in it. All go to a Catholic school, and one of the things, I forget why they're in the chapel praying, but this other girl's like chasing this dog that she thinks is her dead dog that she has like seen, chases it like upstairs into the chapel, and then it pees on the ground, and some of the pee goes through the floorboards and lands, I think it's on the Virgin Mary, but it lands like near her eye, so it looks like she's crying, and they do a whole thing, everyone freaks out that they have like a cry, like a miracle, and she finally confesses at the end that she chased a dog upstairs.
It was dog piss.
And it was dog piss. Oh man. Oh, okay, so there's a
sorry
crowd
for that big that's tangent, okay. But...
so there's a crowd of people, right, because it's a crime scene, and that's, mm-hmm, what happens. And in the crowd was a man named Brockman, and he was apparently known to be a friend of the Bender family. And so everyone there is, like, so upset and, like, needs an outlet for their anger. So they grab Brockman, tie a rope around his neck.
No!
Hung him from a beam in the cabin until he was unconscious.
Absolutely not. That's not how we...
That's not how we do things.
No. That's not how we express our emotions.
They cut him down.
I understand you're frustrated.
Yeah. Take a breath. Which, by the way, guys, Katie's child does the cutest thing because she's an amazing mom and has taught him, when you're frustrated, take a breath, and he'll just go, it's so cute. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he starts getting worked up. Are you frustrated? And he's all better. Smart.
I have to remind myself to take a breath.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I'm better at reminding him than myself. I'm better at helping him regulate his emotions, yes, than my own.
Yes.
Which I hope.
Well.
Because nobody helped me regulate my emotions.
Yes.
So. Well, it's got to start somewhere.
Unfortunately, all these people did not have you as a mom. And also, Brockman could not take a breath, literally. So they would cut him down after he went unconscious, and then they'd interrogate him, presuming that he knew something. They did this 3 times to this poor man before they finally let him go, and he, like, didn't know anything.
Yeah, because just because you're a friend of or friendly with, there's a difference, yeah, between being friends with and, mm-hmm, friendly with.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of weird people that I would not want to...
Just because we're friends doesn't mean, like... You could be murdering people, and I could have no idea. Like,
that's true. Although friends, you should. Because if I'm going to murder someone and tell some, like, obviously you'd be the person I would tell. And, like, I feel like it would come... I can't keep a secret. Like, it would come out somehow in one of these
stories. I feel like I just figured out. You'd mention a story. You'd be like, oh, we were doing this thing. And I'm like, well, you said the other day that this thing... I feel like I'd just catch you in a lie.
Yeah. Or I would, like, do a whole... I would turn it into a podcast episode and try to, like...
Pass it off as someone else.
Pass it off as something else.
You're like, that's weird. I just saw a police report about a very similar situation.
Oh, man. So, soon, thousands of people have shown up to the crime scene. The entire cabin was picked apart by people who just wanted to...
This is the raisins all over again.
The raisins, exactly.
What episode was that, for people who don't know?
That was the family... Lawson family murders, I think.
Yeah. Go back and listen to that one if you want to know what we mean about the raisins.
Yes, if you're unfamiliar with... people just taking parts of crime scenes.
A raisin cake out, and people took the raisins because it was a souvenir from a place where a bunch of people were slaughtered.
Didn't they eat the raisins too? Or they just...
I think they took them as a souvenir.
Okay, I hope so.
Because by that time, also, like, that cake had been sitting out for a while.
Yeah, but raisins don't go bad.
I'm just saying.
Okay, well...
I think also... the point of taking it is to take the souvenir to then show and brag to other people, like, oh,
weird,
check out this raisin I got. Like, remember that Lawson family that got slaughtered brutally?
This came from their house.
Children? Yeah. Remember how horrible that was? Yeah. Check out this raisin. This is from the crime scene. There might actually be a little splatter of blood on it. So the house has been picked apart by the thousand people. Yes,
yeah. They even took, like, stones from, like, the well, plants on the property they took. They broke up the bed in the house and took, like, wood fragments. It's a whole thing.
I wouldn't want the plants because I'd be like, these plants have been fertilized with dead bodies.
That's probably why people wanted them. So freaks.
Weird.
I also wonder...
Like, I love hearing, like, these, like, true crime-type stories, but I don't need a souvenir from it.
No. But I do wonder if there's, like, families in Kansas that, like, have, like, a family heirloom that's, like, this sliver of wood came from the Bender family murders.
I also wonder how many people are, like, cleaning out their grandparents' or great-grandparents', like, house and attic and, like...
wood slivers.
Why is there this random rock here with these other, like, here's a couple of, like, random keepsakes, and then here's a stone, or, like a slat of wood that they took from the bed. Like,
you gotta label that stuff?
And they just throw it away.
Yeah, or your heirs will throw it away.
Honestly, it probably was labeled, but who knows.
Anyway, so Dr. York's other brother offers a $1,000 reward, which is about $25,000, for the arrest of the Bender family. The Kansas governor adds an additional $2,000. So now we've got, like, $75,000 in today's money
just to arrest find this family.
They did kind of figure out, based on witness testimony, because there were some people who, had gone to the inn and avoided being murdered. And then also physical evidence. They kind of figured out that this is what they would do. So
we survived, but we did have a weird experience.
We had a weird, yes.
Not a 5-star review.
Yeah, 3 stars, 3.5.
Stars. Bed fell apart in the middle of the night. Almost fell through the floor.
All right. Well, did you notice in that diagram of the house that there is a square that says trap?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so guess...
First, I thought it said tarp. But that's because I'm, like, marginally dyslexic, so...
That's okay. So guests would be told / made, maybe, to sit at a specific spot at the table when they were eating. And so they would be sitting so that their back was to the canvas cloth that separated the rooms. And then one of the men would sneak up from, like, behind the curtain and hit them over the head with a hammer through the curtain. And then one of the women...
Hence the skull bashing.
Hence the skull bashing. One of the women would slit their throats to ensure that they were dead. And then the body would be dropped through a trapdoor into the basement.
To bleed out until he died.
Yes. And so I don't know if there's two different trapdoors, because one was found under the bed and one seems to be under the
Yeah, just like in the chair. Middle of the cabin.
Yeah. But a trapdoor. Then they would be stripped of all their possessions and buried on the property. And then they would, like, sell their possessions in their store. Although, like, not all of the victims were wealthy, so there is speculation that they were possibly also just doing it because of murder.
Well, you know, one of them, there's also the speculation of, not necessarily witchcraft, but, like, maybe it was used as, like, a ritual for communing with the dead. Like, yeah. Oh, we haven't talked to any dead people in a while. There's no dead people around. We gotta keep our skills sharp. Let's make a dead people.
Let's make some dead people and then try to talk to them.
And then chat with them.
Yeah.
Be like, dude, why'd you kill me? Like, sorry, just making sure we could still talk.
And I'm surprised that...
Glad it worked.
Like, no one has mentioned the body parts and the fact that there were, like, missing body parts. One person who was, like, a witness who stayed there, they refused to sit at that spot at the table because of stains on the cloth. Excuse me.
Like, why did you stay in the area at all? Like, if you were that leery to sit in a chair,
well,
you should be leery to be in that building in the first place.
I think they ran away after that.
Yeah, like, but wait, you're really insistent that I sit in this one spot, and you go to sit down, and you look behind you, and there's, like, blood spatter, except for a, like, human silhouette shape, and you're like...
My question is, guys...
No, thank you.
Why aren't you changing out that sheet, or, like, cleaning it? That's so gross.
It's art. Maybe they like their like Jackson Pollock blood spatter plate thingy.
Oh my gosh. So many of the witnesses were just like, saw something suspicious and got uncomfortable and left. And I'm like...
And didn't tell anyone.
And didn't, you know, I'm like, what? Okay. They did find more than a dozen bullet holes in the cabin. So they did speculate that some people had like tried to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't make it. So, investigators followed some wagon tracks leading from the cabin, and they followed those north for about 12 miles, where they found the Benders' abandoned wagon and starving horses. I don't know what...
Like, I shouldn't be surprised that these serial killers are...
Abusive.
Don't care about their animals.
Yeah. True. So apparently the family had bought train tickets to Humboldt, Kansas, which is like 40 miles north. John Jr. and Kate got off midway and went south, and it's thought that they ended up in an outlaw colony between Texas and New Mexico, and then they weren't pursued further because apparently that colony was known to murder lawmen that came around. I don't... Okay, I was going to say, I don't know why we have just allowed a colony of outlaws. That seems dangerous. But then I also read that they would go west and they would end up in, quote, Indian territory. And because the United States technically didn't have any, like, rights to, you know, govern there, that it was, like, a common place for fugitives to live and just be free. John Sr. and Elvira continued north to Kansas City.
Kind of like an interesting counterculture kind of a thing.
And I'm like, okay, good. The U.S. government shouldn't have any control of those areas. But also, should that be just like a free-for-all space for
I mean, killers? That seems like a big risk to like... Okay, yeah, I'm trying to outrun the law, so I'm going to go live with the other criminals. And, like, there might be a code amongst criminals, but at the same time, it's not all criminals. And it's like, okay, yeah, I'm on the run from the law, but I'm going to go hang out with a bunch of people, like, if I, you know, being a woman, like, probably going to be a bunch of rapists in that community, too. It's like, you're really taking a risk. You're it's really a gamble. Like, yeah. Again, there might be a code. It's like pirates. There's a code.
There's a code.
But at the same time, it's more guidelines and straight up rules. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
So there's also a possibility they think that John Sr. And Elvira joined Junior and Kate in their little colony.
Well, also, if all of the, like, criminals are over there...
yeah.
...in a colony of criminals, mm-hmm. like, if they kill each other, they're just killing criminals. Right. So, like, what do the lawmen care that a criminal was murdered? Because if the lawmen had captured that person, they were probably going to be executed anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, if they're all over there causing trouble within their community mm-hmm. of guilty people, of bad people, then, like, let them be. Like, let them go govern themselves.
Yeah.
Let them police and murder each other.
Yeah.
If they're not hurting innocent people.
Yeah, I feel like the outlook was very much like, we're going to protect our society.
Yeah.
And, like, so our job is just to make sure that you...
You don't come into our society.
Yeah,
like, if you want to go be a den of thieves and murderers...
Yeah, like, keep your shenanigans over there.
Go steal from each other. Go kill each other. Stay away from us.
Yeah, exactly. oh, my gosh.
I'm not saying that I condone that at all. I'm just saying that I see the logic, especially the logic of the time when, you know, resources were, you know, slim and...
Yeah. It makes sense. So authorities eventually arrested 12 men, quote, of bad repute as accessories who were charged with helping dispose of stolen items taken from the victims, which seems vague. But it did include Addison Roach... One of the roaches, and his son-in-law, and it included that guy Brockman, who, lest we feel too bad for the treatment,
actually did know something / was involved.
Well, I don't know about that, but he was arrested 23 years later for the rape and murder of his 18-year-old daughter. So
gross.
Turns out he wasn't a great person.
Never said he was a great person. Well, he didn't deserve.
Yeah,
like, don't take your frustration out on him.
Yeah, we should, I guess, stand by our.
Then again, you know, it was 23 years later.
Yeah,
it was an 18-year-old daughter. Maybe they should have just killed him then, so that he couldn't have had the daughter to then. Because. I mean, how long had he been abusing her at
this
point?
That's true. Yeah, that actually I didn't think about
so,
that.
So, yeah. It's probably better that he never had the daughter in the first place.
Yeah.
Anyhow, that's ethics and stuff we're not getting into tonight.
Yeah.
It's late. I'm tired.
several vigilante groups claimed to have found and killed the Benders. One group claimed that they found them and shot everyone but Kate and then burned Kate alive.
No, she's a witch, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's why you have to. Another group claimed that they caught them, lynched them, and threw their bodies in a river. And then another group claimed that they had killed them all in a gunfight and buried them on the prairie. But none of the groups claimed the $3,000 to $5,000 reward. So, like...
Because you need some sort of proof.
Were they just lying, or did they just kill other people? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Like, it could be lying. It mm-hmm. could be that they killed other people and thought that they were the...
Yeah.
I think it's more likely tall tales.
Let's hope.
You just...
Yeah.
Just trying to... You know, they cared more about the clout than the reward.
Yeah. That's true.
They wanted other groups to fear them or respect them or whatever.
In 1884, a person was murdered in or near Salmon, Idaho, by a blow to the head. And the suspect that they arrested matched John Sr.'s description. So authorities sent someone to Cherryvale, or they requested that someone from Cherryvale come and, like, identify this person. They're like, if someone knew what, like, just someone come Yeah, tell us if this is
it's the person a similar we're looking for. MO. He looks, you know, the description is similar.
Yeah.
Can if you've seen him in person, can you come?
Can you come tell us? Yeah. But before they got there, before the person from Cherryville got there to ID him, the suspect severed his own foot to get out of the leg iron and then bled to death. I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh.
But like, it's just absurd and ridiculous and unexpected.
Part of the plot of Saw.
Yeah, that's where my brain immediately went.
And bled to death. And then, by the time the person from Cherryville got there, the body was too decomposed to identify. I shouldn't laugh about such gross stuff, but
I mean,
hilarious plot twist.
I mean, even if the dude wasn't senior, he was guilty of... He was guilty of the murder that he was arrested for, I'm sure.
Yes.
And then probably a good bit more.
Yes.
So he was like...
it's worth it to cut off my foot.
And risk bleeding out. Yeah. So, like, again, that's a gamble.
No, thank you. No, thanks.
Not a good one, because even if you don't bleed out, you're likely to get infection.
You're going to get something.
You're going to get that gangrene.
Oh, gross.
Lord.
In 1889, two women were arrested in Michigan on larceny charges. They apparently matched the descriptions of Kate and Elvira, although the older woman didn't speak with an accent. Who knows? Hmm. Several witnesses from Osage identified them. But then they were eventually cleared when evidence was presented that the elder had been incarcerated in 1872 on manslaughter charges for killing her daughter-in-law. Another weird plot twist. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, you couldn't have done these murders because you were in jail for another murder. So I guess we gotta let you go.
Except for the whole larceny.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think, I don't know what happened. That story was so confusing, I was like, I'm going to summarize that as best I can because it'll confuse everyone. So the Benders, to my knowledge, were never officially found and their fates remain a mystery. Although one book did say very definitively that they all ended up in the outlaw colony. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they could know that for sure.
Which, again, how long did they stay there?
Yeah.
How long did they live or how long did they last there?
Yeah. Some sources say that John Sr. died by suicide in 1884, which was the same year that that one guy cut off his foot, so...
Kind of suicide.
Kind of that. Another source said that John Jr. died of apoplexy, which I forgot to look up what that was.
I'm gonna look it up right now, because it's one of those, like, it sounds familiar, I should know it.
Yeah. So, theoretically, he died of that sometime while living in this outlaw colony.
Okay, that's kind of what I thought.
No, what is it? Bleeding to death from cutting off your own foot?
It's a basically a stroke.
Oh, okay.
But apoplexy is unconsciousness or incapacity resulting from a cerebral hemorrhage or stroke. Yeah. Informal incapacity or speechlessness caused by extreme anger. So
you get so angry, like, saying,
like, someone who's just, like, so angry and they can't speak and they're apoplectic.
Oh, okay.
But also in The Sims, your Sims can become, like, extremely enraged and actually die. So there's lots of fun deaths in The Sims and there's emotional, like, you can actually die from embarrassment. Like, literally nice. Die of embarrassment.
Like, I've done
and then there's
before.
Dying of anger.
Nice.
And you can die from hysteria. Like, okay. They can become playful.
Uh-huh.
And then seriously playful. And, like, hysteric. Or, like, hysterical because they're so playful that they'll just,
That's hilarious. I'm going to say that that's the one that John Jr. died of.
He just got so angry. His brain, basically his brain exploded.
Or he started doing that laughing thing so hard that he died.
Yeah.
Sorry to end on a sad note. It's believed that more than 20 victims can be attributed to the Bender family. The bodies of Henry McKenzie, William York, George, and Mary Ann Longcore, and W.F. McCrotty were claimed by their families, but the rest of the bodies were unclaimed, and they were all buried at the base of a small hill about a mile southeast of the Bender property. And that's the story of the Bender family that was possibly inspired by the story of Thomas Cole, which was possibly the inspiration for Old King Cole. And I have no idea what I'm titling this episode. But that's it. So
now I gotta ask Scott and Tay about these places in Kansas in relation to where they're from.
I forgot that they are from there. Mm-hmm. We should, yeah. You should ask if they've been to the Cherryvale Museum and seen the hammers. Mm-hmm. Or gone to the other museum and requested to see the four-inch knife. We should really be generous and call it a 6-inch knife with the handle.
When it gets excited.
On a good day. When it's being used. It's
a 6. When it's being handled properly. When so, on that note, if you want to see the pictures from tonight's episode, or today's episode, or just this episode,
whenever you're listening,
you can check out our Facebook and Instagram at The Tales We Tell Podcast. If you want to see pictures but don't do the social media, check out our website, thetaleswetellpodcast.com. And if you want to support us and get yourself some sweet, sweet swag, check out our Redbubble store. Just search The Tales We Tell. We've got multiple logo designs, and you can put that shit on anything. And if you want to support us, but you don't need the stuff except, I don't know, early access, commercial-free listening, sometimes some fun bonus content on stickers and love notes, you can become patrons at patreon.com, search The Tales We Tell. And until next week,
bye-bye!